You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Alice Shepherd. She's talking to me from Los Angeles. Alice, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. I'm actually buzzed and excited.
I'm excited too. Tell me a little bit about what's happening in Los Angeles now. We're going to go into a lot of details of your production company, but what are you doing at the moment there?
I'm sitting in the dance studio in the middle of rehearsals. I am going to do a small sort of intimate showcase on Friday. That will be Friday the 7th, I think, of December. Beginning to think about working in Los Angeles and meeting people and connecting around the idea of disability as an innovation and not as a kind of retroactive accommodation or personal medical situation. I'm really going to be talking about some of the things that get me going, get me juiced, and that drive my creative dance work and my other kinds of change-making sort of art, a social practice work. So the studio is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to sharing some slides and dancing my heart out.
So let's talk a little bit about what your performance will be like then when you're dancing. There's a course that listeners will learn more about you through the website and everything, and I also want to talk about disability as an innovation, as you were saying, but in your upcoming performance, you will be performing as well as giving a talk?
Yeah, I like to do these kinds of gatherings where there's no point talking about dance, right? There's just no point in talking about dance. If you can do it, you should do it. And that's the way in which I think I'm able to communicate most meaningfully with people. So I like to mix a part of my solo program with kind of slides and decks about talking about what I'm doing, some of the context, some of the background, some of the framing. And then actually on this Friday, we're going to be sneak previewing an incredible dance short film that we made. So that's going to be on the menu as well. I'm so excited. I just buzzed to share all of this and to
be able So when you talk about the performance that you're going to do, and maybe we can incorporate that, some of your choreography and your approach, into the idea of disability as innovation. And perhaps in talking about what you mean by that, and because it sounds like a wonderful lens to approach your choreography or work through or collaborations, what do you mean by that? Or how will you pursue that? And can you also put that in the context of your production company and exactly what you're doing?
Yes. But this is going to be a mega long answer.
Interrupt you if I don't understand something.
Yeah. No, interrupt me if I'm going on too long and if I'm not clear. So let me back it up, right? So the first thing I think that people are used to thinking of disability as a personal medical situation, you know, and it's not something that people actually want to talk about, right? It's a private medical situation, and those things get framed in public narratives as either these kind of like tragedies or disasters or obstacles, and it's led to this kind of weird seesaw discourse in which people say things like, oh, you know, I have X diagnosis, but X diagnosis doesn't define me, because they're kind of reacting to the social stigma of what it means to have a diagnosis or that particular diagnosis in the public sphere. So you get
in that case, the diagnosis is that what they're pushing against is that the diagnosis does in fact define you.
Yes and no, right? It doesn't define them, and then I think that's the whole point. It doesn't define them, but it defines what people think of them and as they encounter them and as they move through the public sphere, through our civic life, through our municipal life, you know, the transportation structures, voting structures, work employment structures, educational structures, all these kinds of systems that we encounter as we go about our lives aren't necessarily set up to accommodate someone with a disability. So in some ways it's necessary to define them, it defines them as a person. It is that these things get constructed relationally in the encounter between a person with a specific diagnosis and the system. So, and what they're trying to push about is saying, no, I'm a person. Speak to me, not my wheelchair. Speak to me, not my whatever it is. But that doesn't deal with the kind of structural inequities. So that's where this is coming from. So the next move is to look at disability as like an accommodation, right? So to look at it as a legal thing, to look at it through a rights matter, through to say, you know, I have a right to be here, and, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act guarantees me certain rights and certain protections under the ADA. So the disability begins and becomes about how can the non-disabled people accommodate the disabled people without actually too significantly having to alter the already existing systems of power, if that makes sense. So it's a practice of accommodation, but not necessarily social change. And then as an example of that, I mean, you can think of these like robotic exoskeletons that people are making these days. And this is the basic idea is if you can restore someone to walking function, they will be able to resume who they were, meaning they will be able to participate in all the social structures with the same kind of power and same kind of expectation that they used to have. So restoring the function, the ability to walk, is essential to understanding how people are in the world. But it doesn't actually question why is it that walking is the determiner of belonging and of social status and of first-class participation in the world. If we can access that question, we can build a different world. Maybe we won't actually stigmatize using a wheelchair so much that people feel like they have to get back and walk. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, that does make sense to me. That's clear. And so when you talk about innovation or collaborative that you're trying to reach out to or collaborate with other people, talking about disability as an innovation, are you talking mm-hmm. about it in the, I mean, it's clear what you just said, but also talking about the idea of you see people with exoskeletons, you know, creating these kind of superhuman gestures or whatever they are. Is when you talk about innovation in the context that you just mentioned, is that also in terms of how a performance plays out
or how a dance
is choreographed? Because we're talking mm-hmm. about, you know, social and political ideas now, but then there's also, it comes down to your performance and your company, right?
That's
performing on stage and articulating some of these ideas of innovation.
So here's where the rubber hits the road for me. These ideas, the idea of this medical situation and the legal and civic situation is not where I am. It's like these are the precursors. You have to have all of these pieces, but this is not what interests me. I am juiced by the idea that disability itself can be its own creative and aesthetic force, not incidental in the work. You know, I don't just happen to have a disability. It is the way in which I use my wheelchair, my disabled body, actively inform the work that I do and actively make my movement possible, actively create the lines and the forms in the work. So literally, it's instead of being an accommodative practice for me, instead of trying to adapt my movement so I look like a regular ballet dancer, except that I'm using a wheelchair, no, I'm actually asking questions like, what happens if we let the disability lead and go with that? And that's building it into all aspects of my work. So not just in movement generation, which is critical, so that we're not in this kind of like adaptive or translational or transposition place, but to actually let this lead, to let the wheelchair tell me how movement works and to explore the maximum capacity of this structure that I live in. It's not
absolutely
it's
so,
not
so,
accommodative.
So that's good. So let's talk about how you choreograph within your company. You're working with other people who are mm-hmm, also mm-hmm. Talking about the same issues that you're talking about, or they're manifesting or illustrating mm-hmm, some of the mm-hmm. issues that you're talking about. So how do you choreograph let's say a performance, perhaps an upcoming performance like the one in Mexico City on February 4th? You know, how are you approaching that as a choreographer? And I know you talk about this as a production company too. So we could get into that, but I'm interested also in how you choreograph and how you work with the dancers that are disabled.
Yeah. So my primary collaborative partner is Laura Lawson, and she is just a bucket of fun. Like, literally, we get in the studio together, and I would have done a lot of research. I have done all of the academic research, and I will have all of that backed up, and I have a scholarly paper in process on the piece, and, you know, I've got all of that. But when it gets down to it, we will be asking, what if? Can you? If you put your hand there and do this and try that, can you do that? And so literally we are just constantly in this push, this space of physical exploration, where we understand what our bodies can do and push them and push them and push them and train to it. Like, we take a regular glance class to understand the training and the work. But when we get to the studio to choreograph, we're actually pushing and driving from the notion of where we sit. And that is driving the work that's on stage. It's driving my own process. You know, for example, one day I was like, oh, what would happen if I, instead of just dancing in a wheelchair or trying to dance with crutches, what happens if I put my wheelchair and my crutches together? And, you know, and then what happens? And so that's a whole different embodiment for me now. Like, I dance with this kind of weird form with these 9-foot, 11-foot, actually they're about 10.5 feet long arms because my crutches are so long. And so that becomes a whole set of embodiment. And this is really where the artistry is in understanding how to let the impairment, the potential, the creative potential of the impairment speak straight up and straight down. And that's in the work. It's in the idea that we think of access not as a retroactive accommodation, but really a way of thinking about, but yes, so to get to the idea of access as accommodation, you know, it's like we think of access as being this, the mainstream world thinks of access as being this kind of thing where, you know, there's a structure and, oh, oops, there's a disabled person, now we have to make it accessible. Or, oh, oops, the disabled person now wants to understand this performance, now what do we have to do? And my take on that is that if you get to that question, it's too late, way too late. So how do you think about access as an aesthetic and build it in from the very beginning in the creation of the world and the work? In the world, I'm going to go with world because I do think of my work as a world that I'm building. So it's literally about how does it make the work not just accessible, but aesthetically accessible as you build it. And so we've been working in particular.
It's really also a theoretical framework you're talking about building. I mean, we're talking about choreography and dance and dancers, but you're also talking about a theoretical framework about how to approach what you're doing and work with the dancers that you're working with, aren't you?
Yes, and also audience members, right? I mean, you want the world to land and have a home. And so it's literally about thinking about, yeah, I can be on stage and make this kind of fantastic movement, but unless it's accessible, right, half my audience, you know, can't access it. I am making work, and I think this is a key thing. Oh, we haven't even talked about this yet. We're going to run out of time. Oh, my gosh. So I am interested in making work what I call in shorthand for us, by us, which is rooted to the disability civil rights movement of Nothing Without Us. And
let me ask you this again. You said the work you called Forest Fires.
Yeah, it's not a particular piece. It's a strategy for artistic creation.
Yeah, go on. I just wanted to make sure I had that right.
Yeah, because I looked around one day and I realized that, you know, in the past 30 years of concert dance by disabled people, almost none of the work has been made by disabled people. And I'm like, oh, we wouldn't have a situation where all the work for black people would be made by white people, right? We just wouldn't do that anymore. And so one question is, how is it that this is the case? And what, you know, I know that disability is cultural and aesthetic. And I know that my work stands in conversation with other works by disabled artists, particularly visual artists. you know, one of my strongest conversation partners is Eli Clare, who's a poet and writer, or Eva Lara, who's a visual artist, and we talk about aesthetics and politics and philosophy and identity and representation as they show up in our work. And so my work is in conversation with their work, which is in conversation with goodness knows. And so it's this constant absence of the disability cultural tradition that people don't know. People aren't disability cultural literate. You don't get educated in that. So people don't know it. So when you're making work, if you don't have access to that culture, you're constantly in this position of making work that is about, that tends to land in this kind of dynamic of, oh, look, disabled dancers can do that. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, it's cool. It's beautiful. I felt so moved. And I want to get past that into a place where people can say, yeah, well, you know, Shepherd's work is in conversation with this work, and I can see that the influence is here, and the tradition is here, and it roots back this way, and this is how the legacy works. And people aren't in that place. But I am. I'm making work for us, by us. I'm making work that speaks to our tradition and helps continue those traditions, and that is legible in a particular way by disabled audiences. And I think this was a wonderful thing. We saw this in action in March at the premiere of Descent, that over a quarter of the audience identified as disabled, and more of the audience were disability culture literate. And so things that happened in the piece had this completely layered understanding. Like, if you were part of the disability community, it meant this. And if you were not, it meant that. And so the layers just got more and more complicated because of the resonance of these ideas and my work within disability culture. And that's the kind of work that I'm trying to get to. Like, and for that, the work must be aesthetically accessible.
That's very clear. I'm so glad you said that. Your enthusiasm and energy is infectious, and it's amazing how much we got in there. Let me ask you one more thing, though, before I ask you the last question. In Mexico City, it's an upcoming performance. Some people listening may actually be able to attend. That's February 4th, 2019. What will be happening there? Can you tell us a little bit about that show?
Yes, I can, and it's not good news, sadly. The museum, the deal was to go to a gala and be part of a fundraising gala actually at the Museum of London Contemporary Art there, and they rescheduled, and we're still looking for the date. They had the calendar mixed up. So what would have happened would have been just a solo performance similar to the one that I'm doing here, a series of workshops with local disabled people, but we're looking to re-land the date.
It would be a series of workshops with locally disabled people, you said?
Yeah, and a performance. So,
and but we need you to, know, I mean, the way you're talking about everything is so, you know, kind of forward-thinking into how we kind of perceive what a disability means. It seems even the term disable or disability is kind of antiquated and not quite right. So somehow, sort of, you know, making it seem as the opposite of an innovation, as something you're not able to do, as something less than, and that alone seems like is something you're working against. But the term itself seems to be so problematic.
Oh, can we address that? Because you know I'm about to nerd out on you, right?
Right.
So in a previous life, I was a medievalist and spent a lot of time thinking about disability, about language and roots and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, essentially, I think we're in a really, really bad place. Because of the way people try and break down the meanings of words. So they look at this, and they look at the dis, and they say, well, dis is a negative thing, right? So, and you're not negative, and you're not lacking in all of this, and I see your work is really positive. And so then you see disability being written with a capital A. So you see dis. Ability, and people will tell you, oh, it's not about the disability, it's about the ability. And I'm like, slow down. Because the difficulty with that is that you're still trying to define disability by the medical diagnosis and by the physical capacity of all the mental capacity of a body and mind, right? So you say, it's a disability, you can't do this. And then people come back and say, but I have this ability. And I'm like, well, yes, but you never get out of that swirl. People say, no, you can't. Yes, you can. And I'm really mooted by Toni Morrison, who says something like this. And it's an address to Portland State University in 1975, and it's terrible on disability, but really, really good on racism. And it says, you know, the function of racism, the very true function of racism, is to prevent you from doing your work. First, someone says you have no language, so you spend 20 years digging that up. Then they say you have no history, and so you spend 20 years doing that. Then they say you have your skulls the wrong shape, so you have your doctors working on that. And then they say you have no art and culture, and so it goes on. And then she just says, none of that is necessary. There will always be one more thing. And so by focusing on disability and ability, you're constantly in this bind of trying to prove yourself. Like, I'm not disabled, I am disabled, I haven't disabled, No, right. I'm not in that space. So I will say that disability is the term used by scholars, activists, organizers, artists, and it is the reclaimed term for identity. But it is not rooted in any conversation about ability. And in fact, if you go back beyond this kind of folk etymologizing by trying to break the words down, I think it's like a 17th century definition or something, that a disability is simply a legal definition for somebody who is not able to meet their debts or their contracted obligations, which is nothing. Which has nothing to do with the actual physical capacity of a body or mind. So, you know, disability in that context seems to be about the gap between structures and an individual at any given point. And I don't know quite how it is we got to this place where we have been focusing on, like, the actual physical capacity of a body or a mind. Or no. It's not a conversation I want to be in. It's not a conversation that I can win. It's not a conversation right. I can even shift the needle on. I use disability as my term of culture and pride and identity, but I use it to refer to the art and the culture and the aesthetics of work made by people who are in, you know, who are thinking about these things. In the same way people think about race or queerness and gender, you can think about disability in that way. And that's where my heart and my work is. Can't win the conversation about bodies.
Right. Wonderful.
Sorry,
there seems to be so much room for movement there, just as with queer culture, there's still so much room for conversation and development of terms which mm-hmm. keep of course developing, and with your work as well, there seems to be, you know, so much room for innovation, as you say, and more collaborators and more conversation on that.
I hope so. I sincerely wish for change in that regard. I want it for people to be okay for people to identify as disability, but not just because they're in a position of pride, but also because people know they're artists. They know their history. They know the people in the movement, the political activists. They've seen work that is devastatingly gorgeous and complex by other disabled artists. They've seen work that is less sophisticated and can tell the difference between good work for them and bad work for them. And how, do you know what I mean? That we understand the literature, we understand the politics and the culture. Then I don't think we will be in this bind about whether your body can do X, Y, or Z.
Right. And it was such a pleasure talking with you and feeling your energy even from here. I want to ask you one more question, the last question, which is a rather simple one. Just what is it that you're reading at the moment, or is there something?
I'm reading two books. And I'm laughing because I'm a little embarrassed by one. And I'm really excited about the other. So for work, I'm reading a book about aerial dance, because the next piece that we're going to be doing, it actually features aerial work, and so that's going to be actually pretty exciting, and I'm thinking about I'm thinking about that. And then on the other side of things, I am a great fan of Scandinavian noir detective fiction, so I'm afraid I'm reading that too.
That's fine. Nothing to be embarrassed about. That sounds great. I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure. I wish you luck on your next workshops and performances, and thank you.
No, I mean, thank you. I mean, I hope I've been able to, I know I just talked your ear off, but I hope I've been able to open a conversation with you that makes sense in some ways. And I really, really want to be able to you know, share some of these ideas. Yeah, and I want to thank you for being such a supportive and creative listener, giving me all that space to just kind of like dump all of that stuff on you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.